Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble. Thank you again, one and all, for hanging out with me today. TGIF, as always. The weekend is upon us, people. And wow, what a week this has been. We have got, I could use 2 hours today easily because we've got so much going on here and so much to get to today. And I will remind you that the chat room is open, so please go there and check it out. And wow, well, what you've not so much just what a week it's been, but what a morning, just today alone. I guess everyone knows by now that the decision is in. The Supreme Court has ruled this morning, today, that same-sex marriage will be legal in all 50 states. It will be recognized. And, you know, this is one of those stories that has so many layers to it and so many levels to it. And it's funny because it seems like it should be something that's cut and dried. But, you know, it really it is, but it isn't, you know. And the story I have here, which is very new, of course, from the New York Times here, is that again, the Supreme Court ruled this morning that the Constitution guarantees a right to same-sex marriage. And I don't think it is a big surprise that Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote the majority opinion in the 5-4 decision, and he joined the four more liberal justices on the court in this decision. There's a shock. Here's my shocked face. I know you can't see it because it's radio, but here's my shocked face. And he said, Justice Kennedy said that gay and lesbian couples had a fundamental right to marry. And his quote here from the opinion was that, quote, "No union is more profound than marriage, for it embodies the highest ideals of love, fidelity, devotion, sacrifice, and family. In forming a marital union, two people become something greater than once they were. It would misunderstand these men and women to say they disrespect the idea of marriage," and that is where he is talking about people who are challenging the state bans. "Their plea is that they do respect it so deeply that they seek to find its fulfillment for themselves. Their hope is not to be condemned to live in loneliness, excluded from one of civilization's oldest institutions. They ask for equal dignity in the eyes of the law. The Constitution grants them that right." Chief Justice John Roberts, who we most of us conservatives have our own problems with him, in light of yesterday's Obamacare decision, and we'll of course get to that also today too. But he joined in dissent with Justice Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas, and said the Constitution had nothing to say on the subject. And his quote was that, quote, "If you are among the many Americans of whatever sexual orientation who favor expanding same-sex marriage, by all means celebrate today's decision. Celebrate the achievement of a desired goal. Celebrate the opportunity for a new expression of commitment to a partner. Celebrate the availability of new benefits, but do not celebrate the Constitution. It had nothing to do with it." In a second dissent, Justice Scalia went on to kind of mock Justice Kennedy's soaring language. And Justice Scalia's quote was, quote, "The opinion is couched in a style that is as pretentious as its content is egotistic. Opinion's showy profundities are often profoundly incoherent." So maybe you can, at least on this particular issue, maybe you can guess that maybe Justice Scalia and Justice Kennedy aren't BFFs. A little drama there on the court, maybe. But anyway, same-sex marriage is the law of the land as of this morning. And, you know, here's my take on it for whatever it's worth. That, you know, I guess maybe that I'm getting a little more libertarian in my old age, but that there's maybe kind of a large group of people who maybe do think this way, is that I don't think that the federal government should be involved in anybody's marriage, gay, straight, you name it. Why do I need a piece of paper, a license, a permission slip, if you will, from the federal government that says that I can get married? Why can't I just go to my, you know, if you want a religious ceremony, you go to a priest, you go to a pastor, you go to a rabbi, you go wherever it is that you go, person marries you, why isn't that good enough? Why do I have to have a permission slip from the government? Who the hell are they to say whether or not I can get married or not? And so that's the first thing. I don't think that the government should be involved in anybody's marriage. And the other thing too is that the other side of that coin, to me, and maybe this is not a popular conservative opinion, but I can see both sides of it. Is that, and I can only speak for myself here, and that is that I don't care who gets married. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. It does not affect my everyday life. But again, I don't think that the government should be involved in my marriage or anyone else's marriage. So that being said, to me, this issue is really largely a states' rights issue, 10th Amendment issue to me. And, you know, before I say anything more about that, Let's look at the actual document that people are basing this decision on, and that is the United States Constitution. I know it's old and moldy and out of date, like the left would have you believe, but it really is not. And that is the genius of it, is that it is designed to be timeless, and it is. So the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, which talks about the sovereignty of states, states' rights, the 10th Amendment reads like this: the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And that says that if it's not in the Constitution, it's up to the states. It is a states' rights issue. And there has been, I want to say at this point, 36, 37 states have all put this measure on a ballot and put it to the people, put it to a vote of the people. And in all of those states, with the exception of very few, maybe three or four, I'm thinking, I don't have all the stats in front of me, but with the exception of a few states, all of those people have voted this down. They have said, we the people as residents of pick a state, have said that we do not want this in our state. We do not want gay marriage, same-sex marriage, to be legal in our state. This is what the people decided. The majority of the people, the will of the people, decided this. And what this decision basically says now is that you can put, if you are a resident of pick a state, if you are a resident of State A and you decide that you want to put a certain measure, you want to put something on a ballot and put it to a vote of the people, put it to the will of the people, and those people vote yay or nay, it doesn't really matter ultimately in the end what those people vote. It doesn't matter whether they give you an up or down vote on whatever it is that you're voting on, because ultimately somebody's going to be hacked off about it and offended, because that's what we do now in America. We become offended. And they're going to try to take whatever this is through the court system. And ultimately, if they have any luck at all, they're going to reach the Supreme Court with this particular issue that originally went to a vote of the people in your state. And the Supreme Court, nine people that no one has ever met except for people in the Supreme Court. No one in the rest of the country, nobody in flyover country knows these people. They don't know anybody, but yet they're going to decide for me. They're going to decide for me here in Missouri what I would like to have in my state and what I would not like to. So that's where we're at, folks. That's where we are at, is that you can put a measure on the ballot in your state and put it to a vote of the people, but ultimately the vote of those people in that state isn't going to mean a hill of beans, because if somebody doesn't like it and they manage to get it to the Supreme Court is just going to vote it down and say, well, and what they've essentially said here is that the will of the people doesn't matter. The vote of the people does not matter. And whether you are for same-sex marriage or not, it's so much more than that. Because if that's what we're saying now, if we're saying that I can take a measure in my state and put it on a ballot and the people vote it up or down and somebody doesn't like it and they manage to get it all the way up to the Supreme Court can say to that entire state full of people, well, your vote doesn't really matter. It's null and void at this point. And that's what this says to me. It says that's where we are at. And if that's where we're at, that is a bad, bad place to be. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're black, you're white, you're gay, you're straight, you're rich, you're poor. It doesn't matter. Because now you have 9 people who are going to essentially make decisions for you. And like I said, it doesn't matter if whatever issue this is gets put on a ballot in your state and you vote on it, yay or nay, your vote doesn't matter. Your vote doesn't count, because ultimately someone is going to get it to the Supreme Court and they are going to do what they want with it. They're not going to do what you want with it. They're going to do what they want with it. And again, it is, regardless of your feelings on gay marriage, this is a scary day in America, because that's where we're at. That's basically, the Supreme Court has just told every American citizen at least who has had this put on a ballot in their state, the Supreme Court has said to all of those people, the people of what did I just say, 36, 37 states, your vote doesn't count. Your vote doesn't matter. Your vote was wrong, so we're going to fix it. And all I can say to that is, wow. Wow. The president, of course, has already come out and made a statement on this. And his statement was that it was a, quote, a victory for America. Well, I'm sure that he feels that way. But if you have a body of 9 people who are appointed for life, and they can tell the American people your vote doesn't count, if you've had something put to a vote in your state and the people of your state have voted on it, they've just said to you, your vote doesn't count. We don't care what you voted on, because your vote doesn't count. And, you know, I've seen a lot of comments this morning, and a lot of those comments have been, I'll be paraphrasing, of course, but those comments have been, the transformation is complete. Barack Obama's fundamental transformation of this country is complete. Well, I think it is probably near completion, because he's got a year and a half left to go. And he knows the clock is ticking, and those around him know the clock is ticking. And I don't think he's done yet. I don't think he's done yet. We're going to see more. I would never predict what more may entail. I don't know. But going to have their own opinion on same-sex marriage. And like I said, perhaps I'm getting to be more of a libertarian in my old age, but it doesn't matter to me on a personal level, on a personal everyday level, who marries who. I don't care. But now the thing is, too, also with this, is that you are going to have polygamous come out, you're going to have people who are in other sorts of plural relationships. I think the first people who you may start to hear from now are polygamists. Those, and you see TV shows about, you have, what's that goofy show, Sister Wives or whatever it is, where the guy has, he's a fundamentalist Mormon and he has four or five different wives, and I don't watch it, so I don't know. But you're going to have those people come out and say, because a lot of these people have the, whether it was the state of Utah, Colorado, wherever it is they live, their state or the federal government has attempted to prosecute them for this. They've attempted to prosecute them for bigamy. Well, I'm not sure what this decision says about those attempted prosecutions now, because I think that this sets a precedent. And those people are going to come out now and say, you've said it's okay for two people to marry, two men or two women to marry, then why isn't it okay for this man to have four or five different wives? And or why can't you say that this group of three or four people are all going to be married? They're going to have a group marriage. And again, whether you think that's completely off the wall or not, at this point they've got a valid argument. They've got a valid argument. And I think that bottom line here, I don't think that anyone, very, very few people, are looking at this and say, hey, I was against same-sex marriage because I want to discriminate against gay people. Certainly not. But, you know, aside from people's religious beliefs and things like that, and again, God bless America. That's why we have the right to have religious beliefs that we want. But again, even that is coming into question, and we see that more and more every day. But like I said, these people are going to have a valid argument now. And I don't know that you can say with a straight face, well, no, that doesn't count. I don't know that you can do that. But, you know, I think that this is, it's not going to be the end of, yeah, it might be the law of the land now. There's not a lot that we can do about it. The men in black, the men in robes. Well, there's women too, but I'm going to say men just for, you know, purposes. But so we'll see from there. We'll go from there, and we'll see what happens with this. But you know, at least for myself, you know, it's not about discrimination of gay people. It's not about that at all. Like I said, for me, it's fundamentally a 10th Amendment issue. It's a states' rights issue. And at this point, I don't know how you can argue that the 10th Amendment has any teeth anymore. I don't know if the 10th Amendment was repealed and I wasn't paying attention. I'm not sure. But again, I think that this is, I mean, it's legally, it's, we've come to the end of the line, but in, you know, as far as other things, you know, we'll see what happens. But the other big ruling came yesterday from the Supreme Court, and that was that they upheld the nationwide tax subsidies on Obamacare. And what this did easy for me to say. It's preserving the ability to get government health insurance for a lot of people who otherwise maybe would not be able to afford it. And this was a 6-3 ruling. There's currently around 8.7 million people who are receiving these government subsidies in order to receive Obamacare. And what was happening here is that the opponents were saying that, well, if your state does not have a exchange, that you should not be eligible for these subsidies. And there are quite a few states that opted out of the government exchanges for Obamacare. And again, Justice Roberts was, he kind of sided with all the liberal justices yesterday on this decision. And It pretty much, at this point, until 2016, this whole thing pretty much cements Obamacare. And, you know, maybe the silver lining in this is that maybe it gives the Republicans, provided maybe they would, this is a family show, so I'll keep it clean, grow a set, that it gives them some time to kind of regroup and say, okay, where do we go from here once 2016 rolls around and we can maybe take back the White House. It may do that. You know, this decision really is, it's kind of weedy. It kind of gets into the weeds about the whole Obamacare and about the role that insurance companies play in it. And it kind of makes people's eyes glaze over, but it's important, and it's important to talk about. I'm going to take a real quick, I can't talk today. I'm going to take a short break. And when I come back, we will continue to talk about said subsidy decision by the Supreme Court on Obamacare. And like I said, we've got a ton of stuff to get to today. I could easily use 2 hours, but we'll try to jam it all in. You are listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble. Thank you so much for chilling with me today. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble. Thank you so much for hanging out with me on this fabulous Friday, TGIF. The weekend is upon us. Woohoo! Sometimes I know the feeling. But we are. We are here. The chat room is open. And, you know, I always forget to do this because I'm still kind of back new here at Blog Talk Radio. I was, in case you missed last week, I was on another network, as they say. But you can call in here. The number is 347-857-2620. 347-857-2620. And like I said, the chat room is open. So there is that. And also, like I said before the break, I could easily go 2 hours today because there's just so much stuff going on here. Of course, we've had the Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage this morning, and we were just talking about that. And, you know, people have their views about it, yay or nay, yes or no. And but it is now the law of the land, and we will take it from there. And we'll see what happens, because like I said before the break, you know, legally we may be at the end of the line with this, but there's just going to be so much more to it. There's going to be so many more different there's going to be so many more unintended consequences, I think, because of it. But and, of course, the other big decision came yesterday about the federal subsidies for Obamacare for people who do not live in states that have Obamacare exchanges set up. And this is from the AP, this report on this, that nationally 10.2 million people have signed up for health insurance under Obamacare. And again, that includes 8.7 million people who are receiving subsidies to help pay for this. And the average subsidy they're getting is around $270 a month to help pay for this. And had this not been upheld, about 6.4 million of those people would have been at risk for losing those subsidies because they did not live in states that had set up health exchanges. And you know, a lot of this has to do too that the insurance companies have a big they have a big dog in this hunt, because there would have been a big upheaval in the insurance market. There would have been a lot of chaos going on in the insurance market, and I think we know that insurance companies, well, they are big. They have a lot of influence in Washington. And they have a lot of influence with all politicians in Washington. It's Republicans, it's Democrats, it's everybody. And but South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who is also a presidential contender, said that he believes that for the contenders in the 2016 race that health care will be, quote, the most dominant issue in the country. And I think it's going to be one of them. I think he's partially right. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Democrats who support the law, quote, now have a choice: crow about Obamacare's latest wobble toward the edge, or work with us to address the ongoing negative impact of a 2,000-page law that continues to make life miserable for too many of the same people it purported to help. And that is true. There's a lot of people who thought that this was going to be such a great thing, and went on the federal health care exchange, went on Obamacare, and now they're finding out that their premiums are in fact going up, it's neither affordable nor is it a quality of care. Because here's the thing: anytime you put the government in charge of something, you're not going to get the best service. You're not going to get the best care. And the example I know that everybody throws out, but I think it's a valid one. You know, when you go to the DMV, really, you stand in line there and you go through the ropes there like you're at the amusement park. Well, and you kind of are. You know, is that what people want for their health care? Apparently they do. But so this has also been upheld, these subsidies for people who live in states that do not have Obamacare exchanges, that they will be able to continue to get their government subsidies in order to help pay for their insurance. And I think what the Republican candidates for president are going to have to do, and you know what, we're up to 13 candidates now. We're going to talk about that too in a minute. Soon to be 14, I believe, is that they are going to have to, and not just them, but right now today, Republicans in Congress, be it the House or the Senate, are going to have to get together and come up with a comprehensive alternative to this. They say they have one, but I haven't heard a whole lot. I've heard we have one, but I haven't seen any of the details. I haven't seen or heard or read about any of the particulars of that. They're going to have to do that because, like I said, I think that Lindsey Graham is right in that respect, and that is that healthcare is going to be a huge issue in the presidential election. It's going to be a huge issue. And you can't just say Obamacare sucks and we're going to repeal it. You have to have an alternative to that. And again, if they have one, that's great. Let's see it. But you can't just say, well, we have one. And then, so I think that's what they're all going to do. And the thing with that is too, is that then you're going to have what, you know, let's say we get up to 15, 16 different candidates, you're going to have 15 or 16 different plans. And that's a little confusing. That's a little, you know, you got a lot of gobbledygook going on there. So it may be incumbent on Congress now, sitting members of Congress, to come up with a comprehensive, viable alternative to government health care. And that happens, because I don't know that that's going to be a good thing to have 15 or 16 different plans put forth by 15 or 16 different Republican candidates, because again, after a while, people's eyes are going to glaze over and, you know, they think, oh, geez, we've heard the first 5, 6, 7, 8 plans. What now? And so I think that that's going to have to be something that becomes front and center. It's going to have to be visible. There are funerals going on this week for the nine people who were slaughtered, who were murdered at the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina last week. And I couldn't get any sound or anything about this because it will be going on as the show goes on today and afterwards. But I believe that Pastor Clementa Pinckney is being buried today, his funeral is today. And President Obama is giving a eulogy. And my only hope with that, and I don't think it's going to happen, but my only hope for that would be eulogize the man, eulogize him for his accomplishments, eulogize him, celebrate the life that he lived, celebrate his commitment to other people, his commitment to being a man of God, his commitment to just helping other people, that he committed his life to serving other people. Why can't we just celebrate that? I don't think that's going to happen. He's most certainly going to bring politics into it. And I'm sure we will hear bits and pieces of that eulogy later on. But in light of this tragedy, of course, I know everyone has heard about the Confederate flag flap going on this week. And again, I think this is an issue that is a lot like same-sex marriage, in that it's a lot easier than some issues to see both sides of the coin. While you can see that for Black Americans, how some of them would feel that this is a symbol of hatred and discrimination, and the reason that it is a symbol of hatred and discrimination to them is because that it's been hijacked by hate groups and white supremacist groups and people like the shooter in this case, in this tragic situation. And it's what started out as a battle flag has been hijacked by these groups. And so yes, to many people it is a symbol of hatred and discrimination, but for a lot of other people it's a symbol of their heritage. And it has nothing to do with racism or discrimination or hatred in any way. But We know how the left likes to do things incrementally, how they like to chip away at things bit by bit by bit by bit. And what we have seen here this week is from the calling for the Confederate flag to be taken down, to no longer be flown above the State House in South Carolina. I believe, again, there's another states' rights, there's another 10th Amendment issue. That's up to the people of South Carolina. If they don't want that flag flown over their State House, then by God, take it down. That is a will of the people issue right there. Let them decide. Put it to a vote of the people. Put it to a will of the people whether or not they want that flag flown over their State House. But since then, you've had Amazon, you've had eBay, you've had Walmart, you've had all of these different companies saying that they are no longer going to sell Confederate flag merchandise. You have people who are calling for the taking down of monuments. You've had the vandalism of monuments. We had a monument vandalized right here in St. Louis this week. And here's the problem with that. You can't change history. History is not always going to be good. There's ugly parts of history. And there are many people, many, many Americans are going to be the first ones to stand up and readily admit that, yes, there are ugly portions of America's history, but that we like to think that because of the genius of the Constitution and because of the genius of the men who wrote the Constitution, they included measures to correct those inequities and correct those ugly parts of history. But I don't think that there is enough people today who remember the phrase, those who forget their history are doomed to repeat it. If you can't just erase parts of history that you don't like. And so now we're at the point where there's even people calling for things like, there's a movie critic in New York now who says that we should ban Gone with the Wind. Really? It's a movie. And by the way, while this certain liberal movie critic is calling for the banning of Gone with the Wind, keep in mind that the first African-American actor or actress to ever win an Oscar, granted, she wasn't allowed into the celebration before, during, or afterwards, there's an ugly part of our history. The first African-American actress won an Oscar for her role in that movie. So is that something that we should also erase? Or you don't get to pick and choose. That's what I'm trying to say, badly, is that you don't get to pick and choose the portions of history that you want to keep and the portions that you want to throw out. And, you know, when we start talking about banning movies, and I don't think anybody's really taken this guy seriously. For the most part, the comments and the things that I've heard about this are from people who are kind of scratching their head and saying, really, seriously, it's a movie, just like what I said. And you know, I don't want to sound all conspiracy or black helicopterish, but you know, at some point when you start talking about banning movies, how far are you away from talking about banning books? And I know that Rush Limbaugh this week talked about, and again, when you talk about the left and how they like to do things incrementally and chip away at them bit by bit by bit, Rush said this week, and he put this forth, that if the Confederate flag now is the culprit, that the Confederate flag is the reason that this nut job went and shot up a church with 9 people inside of it, how many times have we seen on Facebook and Twitter and social media people stomping on the American flag? I mean, you see it every day. There's a place that you can go anywhere on the internet at any time of any given day where you can watch somebody stomp on an American flag. So how far away are we from banning the American, or for calling for the taking down of the American flag? How far away are we? Louis Farrakhan, I believe, this week actually did that. I'm not going to give him any credibility by actually talking about anything that he said. But, you know, I don't think it's that far out there. And I've been saying this all week, I'm going to take that one step further. And again, you can say that I'm crazy, say that I'm a loon, that I'm, you know, you're out of your mind. But like Rush said, let's take what Rush said. How far away, if the Confederate flag is the reason that this idiot went and murdered 9 people, how far away are we from let's use that word. Let's call it what it is. How far away are we from banning the American flag? I'm going to take that one step further, and I'm going to say, how far away are we from until the celebration of things like St. Patrick's Day, until the celebrations of ethnic heritage days, I believe, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, don't they in New York every year have a big Italian-American heritage days festival, big honkin' festival, German heritage days, Polish heritage days? How far away are we from saying that those things are racist? How far away are we from telling people who are of those ethnic origins that you can't celebrate that because it's racist? You know, right now, maybe there's a lot of people saying, St. Patrick's Day, Becky, come on. That's just a bunch of people dressed up in green getting drunk. Probably it is. But there's some celebration of your history behind that as well. And, you know, I'm just going to throw that out there. How far away are we? You know, and you can take it for what it's worth. But I don't think we've heard the last of this. We haven't got to the jump the shark moment yet. We haven't got to the point where the majority of somebody puts forth an idea or a concept, and the majority of people go, okay, come on, really? We're not there yet. Little presidential political goings on here. Of course, this week, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal has announced that he is also going to make a run for the White House. And he is the 13th Republican to enter the race. At 44 years old, he would be the youngest. But he also has the longest resume. And as I read about him, this is a report from Newsmax, as governor, he has a pretty impressive track record. He has a pretty good record. He became Louisiana's Secretary of Health and Hospitals at the age of 24. He served as director of the National Bipartisan Commission on the Future of Medicare in Washington, as president of the Louisiana State University System, and as President George W. Bush's assistant health and human services secretary before he first ran for governor in 2003. He lost that governor's race. He won a congressional seat the next year and the governor's office in 2007 at the age of 36. And, of course, he is the son of Indian immigrants. And, again, there's somebody who has a similar life story to Florida Senator Marco Rubio in that he's the son of immigrants. He's the son of people who knew that by coming to America, they were going to have not only the best opportunities for themselves, but the best opportunities for their children. And Bobby Jindal he's been very popular as a governor. He tackled ethics reform in a state that has traditionally had a lot of corruption in it. He got a lot of credit for the way he handled the BP oil spill. And he has shrunk the state government in Louisiana. He privatized charity hospitals, cut 30,000 jobs, and reduced the state budget, by $10 million. And he won re-election in 2011 with about 66% of the vote. So it's a pretty good record, and I think, of course, him, like everybody else, is going to have problems raising money, because I think everybody thinks that everybody, maybe the conventional wisdom at this point, is that the top money maker is going to be Jeb Bush, not just for name recognition, but, you know, just because the fact that his name is Jeb Bush, you know. But, you know, it's going to get interesting. And I believe next week, and we'll talk about it next week, that New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is scheduled to make an announcement sometime next week. And when that happens, of course, we will talk about it. I'm going to take another short break here. We've still got lots to get to. I'm going to have to cram it all in, but we can do it. So don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. Stay. It's Friday, people. Thank God. Don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are. And I will be right back. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron. Thanks for hanging out with me today. Listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I'm Becky Noble. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. TGIF, thank God it's Friday. And gosh, we've got had so much stuff to get into today. I don't know if I can be able to get it all in just in a couple minutes I got left, but I'm going to try to cram it all in. But while we're talking presidential politics here, we were talking presidential politics before the break. Bobby Jindal has thrown his hat in the ring, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal. I believe Chris Christie is scheduled to make an announcement sometime next week. But we had a little visit here in St. Louis this week from none other than Hillary Clinton. She spoke at a church here. I'm sure that it's probably going to come as a shock, but it was an African-American church. Oh, no. Hillary speaking at an African-American church? I know, it never happens. It's shocking. She didn't use her "I'm in no ways tired" voice. That was unfortunate. I'm sure we were all hoping for that. But here's a little bit of what she had to say this week here in St. Louis.
Despite our best efforts and our highest hopes, America's long struggle with race is far from finished. We can't hide from hard truths about race and justice. We have to name them and own them and change them. That's why I appreciate the actions begun yesterday by the governor and other leaders of South Carolina to remove the Confederate battle flag from the State House. Recognizing it as a symbol of our nation's racist past that has no place in our present or our future. It shouldn't fly there. It shouldn't fly anywhere. And I also commend Walmart for deciding to remove any product that uses it. Today, Amazon, eBay, and Sears have followed suit, and I urge all sellers to do the very same.
Yeah, that's because Hillary Clinton goes to Walmart so much of the time. You know, that's interesting that she would say that flag shouldn't fly anywhere, because back when her husband was the governor of Arkansas, well, he was all for flying that flag in Arkansas. But, you know, hopefully she's going to be called on and taken to task for some of the things in her past, not just for the Confederate flag, being all for flying that flag in the state of Arkansas when Bill Clinton was the governor, but, you know, a host of other things as well. Last weekend, of course, we had the picture that the AP ran of Texas Senator Ted Cruz, also a presidential candidate, speaking at a gun range in Iowa last weekend. And I'm sure everybody has seen this lovely photograph of Ted Cruz giving a speech, and there is a poster with a gun on it in the background. And the barrel of that gun is pointed right at his head. And get ready, people, because that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's just the beginning of the things that Republican and conservative candidates will be dealing with during this election cycle. And, of course, the AP, you know, we had no idea. We had no knowledge. It certainly wasn't intentional. And, you know, of course, you know, let's wait and see, well, what would have happened if the same thing would have happened with Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or pick any Democrat. What would have happened? The left would have been, their bloomers would have been in one giant collective bundle, and we would have heard about this for a week. But, of course, there were crickets from the media because, yawn, it really isn't that big of a deal. And, you know, so let's see what happens when something like this. Oh, and who can forget Sarah Palin's targeting of congressional district with crosshairs? She was responsible for the shooting of Congresswoman Gabby Giffords in 2011 in Arizona. So that was a huge deal. But, of course, having the barrel of a gun pointed at a sitting senator and presidential candidate's head, well, nothing to see here, people. Move along. Also, very quickly, what we have known all along, Valerie Jarrett's family, well, they were heavy into communism. This is a report from Judicial Watch, and they are FBI files that Judicial Watch obtained. Valerie Jarrett's father, Dr. James Bowman, had extensive ties to communist associations and individuals. He was in communication with a paid Soviet agent named Alfred Stern, who fled to Prague after getting charged with espionage. Bowman was also a member of a communist sympathizing group called the Association of Interns and Medical Students. After his discharge from the Army Medical Corps in 1955, he moved to Iran to work. Her father-in-law, Vernon Jarrett, was also another big-time Chicago communist, and the FBI was probing into him as well. For a period of time, Vernon Jarrett appeared on the FBI's security index and was considered a potential communist saboteur who was to be arrested in the event of a conflict with the Soviet Union and the United States. His FBI file reveals that he was assigned to write propaganda for a Communist Party front group in Chicago that would, quote, disseminate the Communist Party line among the middle class. I believe also her grandfather had some communist leanings as well. So, you know, it's kind of what we have suspected all along. Stephanie Rawlings Blake, mayor of Baltimore and enabler of rioters and looters anywhere, everywhere. Well, she was elected this week to the U.S. Conference of Mayors. She was elected president because, well, she's such a shining example of a mayor of a large American city. So there's that. She went on to say acceptance speech here, I can't tell you the heartbreak seeing my city descend into that type of violence and unrest, to see the pain of the Gray family at the loss of their loved one, as well as outrage of the community, to see some destroy their neighborhoods, to see others throw bricks and rocks at our first responders, to see businesses looted, to see the National Guard marching down the streets with automatic assault rifles, to see anyone harmed throughout that very long 2 weeks. Well, if it was so heartbreaking, why didn't you do anything to stop it? Finally, very quickly, South Amherst, Ohio. Authorities say an Ohio auxiliary firefighter reported a fake fire so he could head to the scene and earn a paycheck, but a different department was dispatched instead, and he is now facing charges. 27-year-old Dean Evans of Lorain is charged with inducing panic and making false alarms. Lorain County Sheriff's deputies tell the Chronicle-Telegram in Elyria, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, that Evans said he made the fake report in April so he could respond and earn $500. But the South Amherst Fire Department, where Evans worked, wasn't one of the two departments dispatched to the scene. Police reports say investigators traced the 911 call to a number that Evans had listed in his auxiliary firefighter application. Evans pleaded not guilty on Wednesday, and court records show no attorney for him. Lesson for the day, people. Don't be an auxiliary firefighter and report fake fires. Kind of a no-brainer. With that, I am out of here. Thank you all, everyone, for listening today. Please go to theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Facebook.com/Becky Noble, on Twitter @PatriotWitch, and please go to theblacksphere.net for lots of great stuff there. That is my buddy Kevin Jackson's website, and I have lots and lots of articles there, as well as lots of other awesome, talented people. So please go there and check it out. Everyone have a fantastic weekend, and I will see you next time.
Stand up.